Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
If you say that's what she said one more time, I'm going to pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry. I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
And welcome back. Second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Glad that you are with us on this Reaction Monday. I'm your host, Tom Abraham. And this is not Memorex. This is me. I'm live. I'm here. See that? I'm here. I can tell you that right now. And I can tell you that outside the Big Dog Production Studios, it's raining like a cow pissing on a flat rock. All right. So if you hear some noise out there, that's what's going on right now. I'll give you the update later on, but I'm okay. I'm all right. Just had to have a little biopsy. Just had to have a little tumor biopsy in my neck. No big deal. I'm good. Don't worry about it. I'm good. Guy just stuck a big pen in my neck and sucked out about, you know, 6 gobs of tumor so that they could do some testing. But I'm okay. Don't worry about it. Got a patch on my back. It looks like somebody took a divot out of my back, and I got a hairy back. It looks like somebody took an 8-iron and just swat the divot out of my back and then replaced it with a big white gauze thing. But I'm okay. All right? Yeah, they prescribed a little oxycodone. I said, yeah, I don't think I can do my job on oxy, okay? We'll just have to wait until the end of the show. So for dinner tonight, I'll be having oxycodone. All right, joining us now, Jordan Bianco. And for those of you just joining the show now, don't even know what I'm talking about, don't worry about it. All right, I was kind of wondering how this was going to feel actually broadcasting like this, and it doesn't feel real comfortable, but... don't worry about it. We're gonna soldier through, so to speak. Joining us now, Jordan Bianco. We'll talk a little NASCAR. They were in Watkins Glen, my old stomping grounds at Watkins Glen yesterday. And Jordan joins us now. Jordan, welcome back. How are you, man?
I'm well. Thanks for having me on, and hope you're doing well yourself.
Yeah. I'm doing okay. You know, I mean, it's just it's one of them things. You know, I got a little lumpage going on back there, just below my neck, And they said, well, let's start taking biopsies on it. I didn't know they were going to do it today. I thought it was just like consulting with the surgeon. But he opened me up and started taking stuff out. So, but you know, I'm sure we'll be okay. All right, so the boys go to NASCAR. I got to tell you, it wasn't a bad watch. I love the use of the helicopter, drone, blimp, whatever it was they were using. The overhead shots were pretty good. I'm not a huge road course guy, even though I grew up near Watkins Glen. But it was a pretty good watch. I just don't understand why they had the Australian guy doing. I mean, I know the other guy was off, but I mean, he couldn't find another American guy. I mean, we'd like an accent on our broadcast, but a Southern accent would be a little bit better than a Australian accent. I thought the guy was about to sell me some Ginzu knives or something like that.
Lee Diffie is a good. I like him. I think he's a great listener. I think he, especially when it comes to road racing, he's got a background in that. And it was certainly a different dynamic. And I thought, like you said, I thought the broadcast was really good. I liked how they spread out the announcers, and they had basically one in kind of every turn.
Yeah.
And they just kind of carried it throughout the race. It was a great listen. It was almost like listening to it on the radio. And it was a really smooth. It was a smooth transition from announcer to announcer, and it was good.
Now I know. Look, and I'm all about America. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's the only thing. I just don't want to listen to a foreigner give me a NASCAR race. Don't disrespect. I mean, Australia, it's like our 51st state. I mean, I dig those guys down under. But my gosh, it just didn't sound right. I mean, that was the thing that was bothering me. I thought it was going to be like breaking out into an info commercial or something like that. They were going to cut a car in half and then use that tape, you know, to put it back together or something. But good racing for the most part. Martin Truex wins over Matt Kenseth. Truex continues to run really, really well. And, you know, he just keeps building this lead. I mean, it's going to start out. When this thing starts out with the playoffs, I mean, is tell us how that will work now, because he has such a lead. Isn't he almost like a lock to make it all the way to Homestead?
Basically, if you look at it, as long as he doesn't completely fall off the board and he has three – I mean, it would have to be just three awful races in a row, and some other guys would have to do some things as well. He's got a pretty clear path to Homestead where, you know, if you look at this team and all the points they have, they can afford to have one bad race, maybe even two bad races, because they're going to have basically a 50-point cushion, which is a full race to play with. That's pretty unprecedented. And then you look at the fact that how good they are at a lot of the tracks in the playoffs, Texas, Kansas, Charlotte, a mile-and-a-half racetracks, you know, Chicago, where they've won at before. It's looking like you can almost pencil him in as for one of the four drivers to race for the championship at the end of the year. And Truex said it yesterday. They expect it to happen at this point because the expectations are such that they keep going out and running well, and they've got this cushion. So it's going to be if they don't get to Homestead, they're going to have screwed it up badly.
Yeah, and how is his record at Homestead?
It's okay. It's not bad. He's done well in the past. It's in his bread and butter. It's those mile-and-a-half racetracks that he does so well on. So if he gets there and he has a shot at it, I think he's going to do well. But, you know, I've learned my lesson to sit there and to look at teams and say, hey, then they're going to lock to get there, because I've been wrong many times and I've been right very few times. So, but the way this is setting up and with the new system and everything, we don't know all the cooks and the crannies and everything. It looks like he's going to have a really good chance.
Now, I mean, how big would that be for Furniture Row Racing? I mean, I know everybody talks about, you know, this being a Gibbs Light type of team, but still, I mean, if they were to win a championship, you know, running for Furniture Row with the Denver Mattress car, I mean, that's kind of sets things on its ear a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. I think absolutely. The fact that they're based in Denver, Colorado, of all places, I mean, that's not – NASCAR teams aren't supposed to have – not even supposed to be based outside North Carolina. They're not supposed to be successful if they are. But they've made this work, and good for them. And it's really – it's what you need to see more in NASCAR, which is an owner come into the sport, willing to spend money, take his lumps for a few years, and gradually build up the team. And it's good to see, because it's been a long road for this team, but now it's paying dividends. And you know what? They may be a Joe Gibbs satellite team, but they're outperforming Joe Gibbs Racing. They've got more wins this year. Truex has more wins this year than Gibbs' four drivers have combined. So, you know, it's getting to the point where you've got to start looking at this team as, you know, one of the elite organizations alongside Hendrick, alongside Gibbs, and alongside Stuart Haas Racing, because this isn't some fluke. They've been doing this now for 3 years now, and they keep doing it year after year. They're building something here.
Now, he's teammates with Erik Jones. It's a two-car team, the 77 and the 78. Bad car numbers, too. I mean, that's it. When you got offensive line car numbers, I mean, you know, they got to get better car numbers. But what – now, Erik Jones is leaving. Where is he going?
He's going to Joe Gibbs Racing to replace Matt Kenseth.
So he's taking Kenseth's spot. Mm-hmm. You know, why Erik Jones instead of Martin Truex? And you know, I get that this is a good team and everything else, but you got to – how long is Martin Truex under contract for? Because you would think that with some of these other seats opening up, and especially with his relation, I'm just going to make an end run here. Martin Truex has Bass Pro Shops on his car all the time. Mm-hmm. Bass Pro Shops also sponsors Stuart Haas cars. Stuart Haas has already opened up the Kurt Busch spot, and the Danica Patrick spot may be open. Just in my goofy mind, Martin Truex should be driving the Bass Pro Shops Ford for Stuart Haas.
No, there's a lot of the dots to connect. Taking it a step further, I mean, Martin Truex Jr. is very good friends with Dale Earnhardt Jr., and there's been rumors in the past that, you know, Earnhardt would like to bring Truex over to Hendrick Motorsports if there was an opportunity. But the way it's worked out is Truex a couple years ago didn't have a ride. He was basically on the sidelines. Furniture Row offered him an opportunity, and he took it. And he's very grateful. He's a loyal guy. He likes it. And he also doesn't want to be necessarily with a big team underneath that spotlight. He's done it before, mm-hmm. Michael Waltrip Racing. Didn't enjoy it. You know, he's out of the limelight a little bit. Yeah, he's winning races. He's the points leader and everything. But he's not one of these mega-watt drivers that wants to always deal with all the media and everything else that goes with it. This is a really good spot for him. He can just stay underneath the radar and do his thing. And he likes it. And he's under contract for a couple more years. And he He also doesn't have to play nice with his teammates there. I mean, he is the central focus. Yes, they've got a second car there, but it's, you know, that's a B car. Martin Truex Jr. is the sole focus of that team in a lot of respects, and he's benefiting from that, and he recognizes that's a good thing.
Eric Jones has run pretty good in that mm-hmm. second car as well. Is there any word yet as to who jumps into that car? I mean, obviously there's guys like Kenseth out there, and it would make a natural, you know, swap mm-hmm. for him to stay in a Toyota. But is there any talk about other guys that could be jumping into that rig?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the two biggest names you hear is Kasey Kahne, who today was announced that he's not going to return to Hendrick Motorsports next year.
Oh, so that's a done deal now. Okay,
yeah,
that's
that is a done
then.
Deal. Yeah. And the other name is Kurt Busch, who drove for that team a few years ago and had some good runs with them as well. That's a prime opportunity. I mean, it's you can win races there. Truex has shown that. You're going to have good equipment. And, you know, you look around the landscape a little bit, and opportunities with some of the bigger name teams aren't materializing because of sponsorship. If Furniture Row wants to keep that car, they're going to have it's a robust driver market where you can go out and get a driver and get him at a discounted rate and put him in there. So they're playing from a little bit of advantage right now.
So what's going to happen with the five? I mean, is there a possibility that Hendrick could go to a three-car team? Because he was under contract, Kasey Kahne, for another year, right? I mean, so he's, you know, I don't even know how that happens when they say, okay, he's not coming back. What happens to, you know, that last year of the contract?
Well, they basically bought him out. It was a thing where they don't have a sponsor for that team, and they decided, you know what, we need to move in a different direction. And there was a lot of chatter earlier in the year, you know, back in June, that Hendrick Motorsports was going to go downsize from four cars to three. That's not going to happen anymore. They're committed to running four. Now, the question is where they go with the driver. And, you know, Matt Kenseth's name has been mentioned a lot, but you have to be able to find a sponsor willing to come on board and invest in him. That might be tough. So you're looking at a scenario where it's probably going to be William Byron, the 19-year-old rookie in the Xfinity Series, who people are really high on. Sponsors tend to gravitate towards these younger drivers now over veterans. And he's also going to be a lot cheaper than having, you know, bringing in a veteran. So Hendrick could save some money there and then maybe get a sponsor to help offset some of the costs. So it's probably going to come down to Byron or Kenseth, but probably with Byron at the end of the day getting that five ride.
That's going to be weird because, I mean, you would think that why would sponsors want to get behind a name that we really don't know, even though, you know, he could possibly do something. But Kasey Kahne has got wins. You know, he's Kasey Kahne. I mean, it seems odd. Are they putting it on the driver? That's why they're not able to get sponsorship for that rig? And you know, is that the route that you go to, you know, when you're replacing a guy like that?
Well, and it's two things there. It's one, you know, Kasey Kahne is a name. He's certainly that. But he struggled the last few years. I mean, he only has one win since 2015, and that's not what sponsors are looking for. They want guys who are running up front and being consistent. And another angle to look at, too, is if you're a sponsor, William Byron's this 19-year-old, you know, considered a phenom. He's going to be the superstar. He's going to be around the sport for, you know, a long time. The idea is if you latch on to him early, you can help build your brand, much like you saw with Jeff Gordon and his sponsors in the 90s, and we saw Tony Stewart with his sponsors in the early 2000s, where you basically become lockstep with this driver and you're synonymous with him throughout his career. That's the advantage of maybe lining yourself up with like an Eric Jones or a William Byron or such.
How does Dale Earnhardt Jr., with all of that support and all of that backing in terms of being a Hendrick car, how is it that they go there and they can't run 22 laps without the car blowing up? And he knew it in you know, the whole weekend. He was like, I got a crap car. I got a crap car. I mean, how can he have a crap car?
That's a great question. And if I had the answer to that, I would be telling Hendrick, I'd be offering that advice to Hendrick Motorsports for a check. But they are obviously that team.
Oh, gosh, I got two more good questions for him. T-Mac, get him back. Yeah, get him back. I got a couple of other questions I want to get into with him. And one of them has to do with the amount of viewership that NASCAR, you know, because we slam NASCAR all the time, you know, and about the numbers going down and whatnot. But I've got some numbers in front of me that I think are very fascinating that I want to talk about. That's not just for races, because the races are the number one rated thing every weekend now. In the summertime, now we don't know. I can't wait to see. In fact, T-Mac, while I finish talking to Jordan, I want you to go find numbers for Thursday night. See if you can see if there are overnights yet for Thursday night for the Hall of Fame game. Jordan, so you're talking about Junior and the fact that they couldn't, you know, get a car to stay on a track for more than 22 laps. The other part of this is Junior Motorsports runs a pretty good team in the Xfinity Series. Mm-hmm. Is it outside the realm of possibility that we may see Junior Motorsports and Dale Earnhardt Jr. as an owner in the Cup Series. And, you know, that would be kind of cool to see him run a couple of Cup cars. In fact, maybe he could even run the 8, you know what I mean? Get a driver and put somebody out there in the 8 car.
It's certainly a possibility. It's some things that have to happen. I know Earnhardt has said it's not something that's on his radar right now, and he's got some other things he wants to pursue. And certainly from a business side, that team would have to grow a little bit, and it would be at a substantial cost to do that. But if you're Dale Earnhardt Jr., Nick, you said you've got this team.
He's got a couple of dollars.
He really likes being a team owner. I think it's conceivable. A couple years down the road, I think you could see Junior Motorsports at the Cup level because it's working right now at the Xfinity, so you have the business plan in place.
Yeah, you're telling me that that's a guy that couldn't walk into Budweiser or any other major sponsor and pull major sponsorship for his team? You know, I think that the charisma of him alone and having him at the track as an owner, the Richard Petty type thing, I mean, I think he would be able to generate a decent amount of sponsorship help. Now, of course, he's going to be doing the broadcasting, and so you get into all of that. But I would think that he would. By the way, what do you think about the 88 that he's going to run at Homestead? My first reaction was, my God, why wasn't he running that car the whole time? I mean, you know, why didn't they run that kind of a design earlier? I mean, it's a beautiful car.
It's a sharp-looking car. It's a really beautiful car, very vibrant. I love it, and especially when you have a sponsor like Exalta, which is a paint company. That's the kind of car you want, you know, and I like it. I think they did a great job, and it's really hard to fulfill expectations for fans who are expecting a lot. But I think when they announced that car last week, I think they certainly pleased Junior Nation, who were very happy with what they saw.
I want to throw some numbers out there because we crush NASCAR in terms of the smaller audience and the fact that they're coming down. And a lot was made about, I know that it was a sellout at the Glen, but let's be honest, 36,000. I mean, this is Vanderbilt Stadium, you know, 36,000. It's a little grandstand. They did have a bunch of, you know, campgrounds and all that kind of stuff, but a sellout is a sellout. It's not like when they had 200,000 at Talladega back when they had the whole full grandstand up. But having said that, the race, the numbers are down, but all sports numbers are down, and the race is still leading the way every weekend in the summer. Now, it'll get crushed when football starts. But the races have been very popular. But beyond that, I was looking at some numbers from the support programming, and I just wanted to throw these out there, get your thoughts about this. On FS1, they have the MLB Whip Around Show, which is really, really good coverage of Major League Baseball. And baseball's been, baseball's our national pastime, right? 85,000 viewers. The average viewers for that, 85,000. The Colin Cowherd Show, 70,000 viewers. Skip and Shannon in the Morning, 130,000 viewers. Speak for Yourself, another one of their debate shows, 71,000. NASCAR Race Hub, 190,000 viewers. Mm-hmm. It's their number one show, 2-1 beating the baseball show. And on NBCSN, the Pro Football AM talk show, 14,000. Dan Patrick Show, 50,000 viewers. NASCAR America, their NASCAR show, 102,000 viewers. NASCAR, on all of the stations that have the networks that have a NASCAR show, the NASCAR show is the highest rated show that they've got over the college football show, the NFL show, and any other talk shows or anything else that they've got. So clearly the interest is still there.
Yeah, and that's my comeback when people say, and I'm there are issues within the sport that need to be addressed, and NASCAR certainly needs to kind of market correct itself a little bit from the business side. But when you're continually the number one sports programming on the weekend during the summer, when you're drawing your auxiliary shows or drawing the numbers that you just read, that says that there's obviously a market there. Now, there's better things that NASCAR could do, but all sports are dealing with attendance issues. All sports are dealing with ratings issues, and NASCAR's no different. Now, they maybe have a little bit more of an issue on some levels, but to sit there and say that it's a dying sport and that it's going away, obviously that's not true. The interest is there. There just needs to be a little bit of a correction within the industry to make it more vibrant again.
Yeah, well, and when you look at, for example, the race at Pocono, had 3.67 million viewers. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was three soccer games on that drew less than a million. There were, you know, baseball games drawing a couple of million. There was nothing. I mean, the golf, the PGA Championship this week, maybe because it's a major, but 3.67 million blows away everything else that was being watched. I mean, they made a big deal about the CFL numbers were up. The Canadian Football League numbers were up. They had 180,000 people watch a CFL game. And they're like, hey, that's a 14% increase. But NASCAR's down 12% from last year's Pocono race. But it was 3.67 million people. It was 10 times more anything else.
Yeah, it's not, you cannot, that's why I always say, you cannot just simply say that, you know, NASCAR's got issues. No, you have to look at it in the context. Yes, there's a lot of things that could be better, but it's still doing fairly well, especially when you compare it to other sports. And when it's routinely the number one sport on a weekend, and that's not even counting the Xfinity races, which do pretty well too, I think there's a reason for optimism and there's things to point to. And I think, yes, there's certainly issues that need to be fixed and need to be fixed soon rather than later. But overall, I do like where NASCAR's at, and I think their willingness to do things and make changes and make the product better on the racetrack speaks well for it going forward.
Yeah. All right, man. Appreciate you as always. Good stuff. And where are we going this week? Where are they off to now?
Michigan,
that's what I thought. Okay. Hey, you know, maybe. I mean, they got to get Earnhardt in this playoff somehow. Michigan's a good track for him. He's won there before, so
yeah.
You know, I just don't understand how they can't give him a piece of equipment. I mean, geez, give him Jimmy Johnson's backup car. He's in the same garage as Johnson now, right? I mean, him and Johnson,
yeah,
last 3 years, it's Jimmy Johnson and then the 5 and the 24 are in the garage and then the 8, the 88 and the 48 are in the garage. How can they be building cars side by side? One guy's got 3 or 4 wins. The other guy can't go 20 laps without blowing up.
That's a great question, and that's a question I think Dale Earnhardt Jr. was asking himself yesterday as he was standing in the garage figuring, I'm finishing 30th or worse 9 times this year, which is crazy. It's not good. I mean, obviously there's a deeper issue there, and it's certainly not the driver.
Right. All right, man, appreciate you. We'll do it again.
Thanks, sir.
All right, we're going to grab a break here. When we come back, Teresa Walker will join us, and we'll talk to her about the latest from Titans training camp. They had an exciting weekend. Friday night at Centennial High School in Franklin, and then on Saturday night they were at the stadium, and then guys were fighting at the stadium, which I don't understand because they were all Titans fans. We'll talk to Teresa next. It's the Tom Abraham Show right here on 730-1039.
Read the sign. Beware of dog. Tom Abraham is back.
Buzz is back in the Music City for the Tennessee Titans. Friday night at Centennial. Saturday at the stadium. Hell, even the fans are fighting each other. You know, getting ready for that Raiders game. I mean, look, Raider fan is coming in. You got to get ready, man. You start boxing guys and stuff. I mean, you know, not to make light of it, but I just did. Joining us now, Teresa Walker from the AP in Nashville. T-Dub, welcome in. How are you?
I am good, Tom. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Do you sense that? I mean, I know you're focused on what's going on the field and whatnot, but do you sense that there seems to be just so much more in this camp, not only of a juice for the team itself, but a buzz from the fans and as they went to Franklin and Centennial High and as they went and did the practice, the scrimmage in the stadium and things like that. It just seems to be that love and feeling is coming back.
It does, because here's the thing that it just, you could, let's face it, Tom, $6,800 for a practice. I know that we hear, you know, Jaguars had 20-something thousand for a family night event a week ago, or we hear these big numbers for other teams. But, you know, here in Nashville, $6,800 for a practice at a high school, that's a big number. For the scrimmage, $11,400, that's a big number. And here in this area, and I always give fans here credit, it's like, we want to watch real football that counts. We're not that excited about practice. I mean, we're talking practice. So
yeah.
I think they've always been, you know, good at knowing when to come out. And I think it's a big indicator of just how excited people are about this team that they're turning out. They want to see what's up and get excited about and check out this team. And, you know, they feel the buzz that's certainly been circulating nationally.
Well, and all things are relative. I mean, you know, Alabama fan right now is saying, we're talking about 11,000. We had that many people in the bathrooms at this spring game at Alabama. They, you know, they had 70,000, 80,000 at the game every year. But it's different, you know. It's different in the NFL, and certainly there are places in the north in the NFL where, you know, the Chicago Bears and the Washington Redskins and some of the other teams like that will get the even the Bills at my old school, St. John Fisher College, you know, will get big turnouts. But it's always been that way. That's their college football, so to speak. It was really never this way. It's, you got to look at it relative to what it was like last year. I mean, last year, it was just dead in the stands, and there was nobody. You know, last couple of years, I mean, out at camp, a regular training camp, there'd be days where there might be 100 people there.
Exactly. And, you know, give people credit. You know, Alabama spring game, that people know that it's not going to be football until, August. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to stock up, you know, get them through the summer. You know, for the NFL, NFL fans know that, you know, it's going to be a, you know, we're close to the real thing. I'll hold off and wait. Right. Shoot, we'll have preseason games. You know, Titans are at the Jets on Saturday night. So if you want to see them in more than a scrimmage that they had the other night, you can wait just a few more days. But, you know, they do sense this. I mean, from the tens of thousands of empty seats where they were easily outnumbered by other fans, we are seeing so much more interest in this team. But shoot, Amy Adams Strunk, you know, she stocked up the camp with, you know, really nice bleachers for, you know, temporary, but they're there and with screening and, you know, for some shade from the sun and, you know, cool misting stations. They've done a ton of things out there to help, but people wouldn't be showing up if it weren't for the fact they're excited about what's on the field and the, you know, the positives and the opportunities that they're seeing coming from that.
What do you think the chances are? I mean, she's impressed me in terms of acting, you know, what would the term be, presidential ownership? Like, I mean, she's acting like, you know, she was at the Hall of Fame and game, and she's been out there and made it back and went to, you know, was at the scrimmage, and, you know, she's been very visible, and, you know, those are all positive things. But, you know, at the beginning of the day, she is a Houston girl, born and bred on the Oilers to a certain extent. So what do you think the chances are when this new gear comes out that she's got them back in that baby blue and that Oiler blue more than the Titan blue that I like to call it, the dark blue?
Well, she did tell somebody the other day that the designs are largely done and there is going to be some blue in there. So, yeah, that, you know, if you like that, you know, that Oiler blue, it sounds like it. But, you know, Nike's the ones in charge of having put this together. Mm-hmm. So very curious to see what it ends up looking like. But, you know, the good thing is this. There's a redesign coming that hadn't been around for a long time.
Yeah. Has she said specifically that the flaming thumbtack stays on the helmet, or is she hinting that the possibility of the sword? Because I'm telling you, excuse me, that thing is showing up everywhere. You know, they started that deal with the 12th man sticking it in the ground. That's very cool. And now I, you know, when they came out for the scrimmage, they had the big swords, you know, at the opening. I know on some of the guys, their face shields have a sword on them and stuff. So what do you think the possibility that they go to that look on the helmet?
We have a lot of options here, Tom. And you know, let's put it this way. The flaming thumbtack has not had a lot of love over the years.
No.
So this, and here's the thing. The beautiful thing is a redesign gives them an opportunity to do something different and fun and cool with it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting if they draw any more red into this uniform, because remember, they were going to have an alternate red jersey. Every once in a while, you see people walking around with them, and they never did it. And you kind of get a little taste of what it might look like when you see the quarterbacks in their red jerseys.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, red with a little bit of Columbia blue, we're going to have to stay tuned. That's all I can say. You know, they're keeping them hidden until they do their big rollout. I'm just excited that there is a new look. I mean, it has been a long, long time coming.
Yeah. What's going on with Corey Davis? Anybody? I mean, I know week to week is worse than day to day. What's the latest on his situation? And then also on DeMarco Murray, is that something where they're just keeping him under wraps precautionary-wise?
Precautionary, and yes, DeMarco Murray day to day, so they're much sooner coming back. You know, do we see him against the Jets? We're going to have to wait and see. Do not know. But with Davis, he said the good thing is he felt it starting to go, so he kind of held off. And so the good thing is that's a good thing. He's going to be able to, hopefully, you know, here's the thing. He hopefully avoided injuring it further. So he called it a slight strain when asked, is it a one, is it a two? You know, he wouldn't give us a number. He is hoping to be available when they open the season against the Raiders. And I think if you're a Titans fan, that's what you want. You know, he's looked really good in practice, Tom. You know, the chemistry seems to be there with Mariota. At this point, you just want to make sure he's healthy. And, you know, the Titans have shown they will err on the side of caution in making sure that, you know, he's healed up when they bring a guy back. And so at this point, just wait and see. And, you know, if you're a Titan fan, maybe he's back on the field next week. All I can do is guarantee you this. They're going to be very cautious with the fifth pick overall.
Well, yeah, you know, and it's because he is a rookie. You know, DeMarco Murray could get five carries in the preseason. He's fine. You know, he's good to go. Backs, you know, Adrian Peterson famously, you know, never played in preseason games. He would be fine there. But I think for Corey Davis being a rookie, he really does need to get some reps going in. Now, is he on the field during practice? Is he getting those mental reps? Is he standing behind the offense and kind of going through that stuff mentally?
Well, I definitely saw him Friday night, and there were so many people on the field Saturday night at the stadium. I did not see him, and they're on the field again tonight. So he was watching and taking those mental reps, and he talked about that, you know, being in the classroom and at practice watching, but that's where he's going to be, you know, needing to stay up to speed.
Yeah, and they put out a quasi unofficial depth chart that shows him listed as the number one bracketed due to injury. And, you know, look, they're going to run three receivers probably as much as they do anything else, but or two tight ends. But Eric Decker, it seems like, Eric Decker, Trey McBride, is going to get a pretty good look. Was there anything that surprised you when you looked at that first blush of a depth chart? Was there anything that you said, didn't see that one coming?
Not so much. I mean, you know, I would like to maybe see them list the second tight end as the starter instead of the fullback, because that's where there's actual competition. And this is a team that under Mike Mularkey, former tight end coach, that, you know, they use a lot of two tight end looks in this offense. So would like to see who I think is going to be the other receiving tight end option, Jonnu Smith. But, you know, he's a rookie, and, you know, let's face it, what matters most, more than, you know, unofficial depth charts, is the is when they go out on the field. And Jonnu Smith got a lot of passes thrown to him in the scrimmage on Saturday night. Kid looks legit, Tom. I'll just say this. Delaney Walker earlier this summer said he thinks Jonnu Smith will be better than him by the time it's all said and done.
They're not going to – how many tight ends do you think they'll keep? I mean, they run two tight ends so much. Could it be possible that they would keep four, put three up on game day and keep four? Or which one do you think is in trouble, Jason Morrow or Philip Superno?
I think Jason Morrow is probably the one that's more in trouble, just because, you know, let's face it, Supernaw has been around a bit, so and has been on this roster, and they brought in Morrow last year. So, but that said, I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up keeping four tight ends, just because, you know. But I'll say this: there was a knock against Smith, you know, coming out of college, that he maybe wasn't the best blocker. Watching him in one-on-one drills, Tom, I don't know where that came from.
You know, this defense too. I mean, just to go down through it, it's starting to really shape up body-wise. It's going to be very interesting in the back end. I mean, I think that's going to be the deal. They're listing Logan Ryan and LaShawn Sims as the starting corners. Adoree Jackson, you know, pushing there, Ty Smith, some other guys. But I think that's the thing, is if that – but you know how good a defensive backfield could look. Albert Haynesworth single-handedly put three of those DBs in the Pro Bowl 1 year because he was so disruptive up front. Yeah, I look at Derek Morgan and Brian Arakpo being healthy on the outsides, and, you know, the way the interior of that defensive line looks, and, you know, those guys can make the life a lot easier on the DBs.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, think about this. A year ago, Brian Arakpo gets a Pro Bowl nod, and look at who his backup was. You know, Kevin Dodd wasn't available for nine games, and now they've got Eric Walding being able to come in off the bench. That's not a bad combination. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see this defense. I do think that the pass rush is going to give maybe the secondary time to come together and to grow, because, you know, LaShawn Sims right now is listed as the starter on the outside opposite of Logan Ryan. Ryan's a veteran. LaShawn Sims is just going into his second year.
Derrick Henry looks devastating. I mean, I know you retweeted, somebody had tweeted, boy, what would that look like with 25 carries? And because he's so, and Alabama fans know that he gets progressively more and more difficult for the defense. He's a guy that that looks so much better in the second half and in the fourth quarter than he does early on. Not that he looks any different. It's just a such a toll it takes on that defensive backfield. I wonder how much action he'll get even against the Jets or in the spring, because as much as they are in the preseason, because as much as you want to protect DeMarco Murray, you know what you got with Derrick Henry. I would think they want to protect him too. They got to see how these other guys look. This Brandon Ratcliffe kid that they brought in, and Muhammad, and you know who Fluellen, who is going to be the other back, because you don't want to overwork them. But I know there's a lot of folks down this way wouldn't mind seeing Derrick Henry get about 22 carries one of these games and see what kind of number he could put up.
Well, Derrick Henry has a lot of fans that would like to see him do just that. And, you know, that's the one beautiful thing. DeMarco Murray, you want to give him a rest, you just simply give the ball to Derrick Henry. And, you know, that's the problem. If you're a defensive coordinator, who are you going to start to defend first? Because that's not going to be an easy decision.
I think, they'll be more and more creative of getting both of them on the field at the same time. I think that's what's going to end up happening for the season. We may not see hardly any of that in the preseason, but when the games start for real, I think you're going to see a DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry on the field at the same time, and it's going to create some real fits for the defense in terms of what you do and which one you put off on the hip position and which one you slide out of the backfield, and it could create a real problem.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if you go in trying to load it up with eight in the box, then they can put out Corey Davis, Eric Decker, and go three wide with Rishard Matthews on the other side. So it is not going to be easy to go against this team.
Now, when Mariota took off on a little run, I mean, he's wearing a red jersey. You can't touch the guy. But I know that Malarkey seemed to get pretty excited about it in the way his mobility looked coming off of his broken leg.
He looked good. It was a play action, and it was live tackling drill. You know, so not that anyone's going to touch Mariota, but, you know, he looked good. And, you know, he's rolling out, looked to be throwing to Delanie Walker, and, you know, Delanie was covered, so he just simply ran it in. He looked fast. He looked healthy. Let's put it this way. He scrambled some the first week of camp, Tom, and he has not looked like his leg is an issue whatsoever.
Teresa Walker's been our guest. We'll be all season long talking Titans, which you'll hear right here. Of course, Saturday night, you'll hear the first Titans game here. Dave McInnes on the call along with Mike Keith. We will be talking to Coach McInnes at some particular point in time. He was always a big fan of the show when I was in Nashville. He's a great guy. He's a fan of radio. And it's going to be interesting to see how he does. We wish the best for Frank Wycheck. But I don't know if McInnes has ever done it. He's probably been doing some practice stuff, T-Dub, but I don't know that he's ever done a game before in terms of, you know, getting that rhythm, how you got about 8 seconds to get in and get out as a color guy.
It's going to be an interesting thing. And, you know, he's going to have the preseason to start getting up to speed. You know, guys take courses to get good at this. But Dave Mack, Coach Mack, he knows what he's talking about when it comes to football.
Oh, yeah, so he knows the game.
That will probably ease his transition.
Yeah. All right, appreciate you as always, T-Dub.
Thank you so much, Tom.
We remind you that Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers will be making a pilgrimage to Nashville. And before they play the game, they're going to practice two practices in the morning, August 16th and 17th. They'll be practicing with the Titans from 9:15 in the morning to 11:30 in the morning. So that may be worth a little roadie. I'm just saying that might. What kind of days are those? Is that a Wednesday, a Tuesday, Wednesday, and then they play on Thursday? What's the 16th and 17th? Let me see, 16th, 17th, Wednesday, Thursday. That's a Wednesday, Thursday. T-Mac, you up for a little roadie? Want to go to practice? I might have to make a little run up there, man. I might have to. I can get us, you know, credentialed. We'll go up there and stand on the sidelines and watch it a little bit.
Hey, I'm right there with you, big dog. You decide to do that, you got a happy producer, I'm telling you right now.
All right. We may need to do that. We may need to check out a little bit of practice action. All right. Let's get a break in here. When we come back, phone lines are open. Plus, we need to get an update from T-Mac. It's a Doghouse Sports Report, and it's coming up next right here at 730-1039. Yeah.
Now back to the big dog. This show is rough.
Yeah. Welcome back, Tom Abraham Show. Let's get an update with the headlines right here. It's a Doghouse Sports Report.
The Atlanta Braves lost to the Marlins yesterday 4-1, but won the three-game series. The Braves now 51-59 are set to take on the Phillies tonight at SunTrust Park. You can hear that right here on the Ump at 6:20 p.m. The Alabama Crimson Tide landed their third recruit in 5 days in the form of 6'5" offensive lineman Jarrett Bell. The California native was a two-star recruit prior to today, where he now draws a 4-star rating from Rivals and a 3-star rating from 24/7 Sports. Other college football news includes Houston Nutt has offered to settle the defamation lawsuit against Ole Miss. What he wants in return? $500,000 and a public apology. The NFL's Hall of Fame got its latest inductees when Jerry Jones and Kurt Warner headlined a star-studded class, which was rightfully honored this weekend. Other NFL news includes Anquan Boldin signing a 1-year, $2.75 million deal with the Bills to compete for the second wide receiver spot alongside Sammy Watkins. Also, Jay Cutler signed a 1-year, $10 million deal with the Dolphins yesterday. This signing comes after Dolphins starting quarterback Ryan Tannehill suffered a season-ending knee injury. And finally, former Major League MVP Don Baylor passed away earlier this morning. The 19-year vet and manager reportedly passed while fighting multiple myeloma, which is a rare type of cancer that affects the plasma cells. I'm Tony Mack, and that is your Doghouse Sports Report.
Yeah, you didn't tell the rest of the story on the Houston nothing. The $500,000 is to go to a foundation to help with something in Mississippi. I forget exactly what it is, but it's not like he's not looking for it's not like $500,000 to him.
And
it's
now you know the rest of the story. Yeah, he's not pocketing the money.
Yeah, he wants a $500,000 donation being made to the commission to establish a state commission on sports ethics in Mississippi. All right, so that's the deal. He would donate the $500,000 to establish a state commission on sports ethics in Mississippi. So that's the rest of the story there on that guy. Don Baylor passing, you know, this guy here, I mean, nobody got hit. Well, I should say nobody, because there was four guys that got hit more than Don Baylor. But not only Don Baylor passing, but how about Phillies legend Darren Dalton passing away at age 55 years old of cancer as well? I mean, my goodness gracious, those two guys. But Don Baylor, he was the AL MVP in 79. And as a kid, I used to go to Silver Stadium in Rochester, New York, and see Don Baylor play for the Rochester Red Wings back in the early 70s. In 70 and 71, Don Baylor hit 42 home runs in AAA baseball. That's a lot of home runs in AAA baseball in 144-game season. He had 22 and then 20 or 20 and then 22, and that was back when it was hard to hit a home run. Not the dead ball era. I'm not that old. I'm just saying, you know, the ball wasn't juiced, nor were the players. But Baylor was a big man, and I was like 10 years old, and we used to go to the stadium and see Don Baylor and Bobby Gritch and those great Orioles play, and he went on to have a tremendous career with the Angels as well. And Darren Dalton, I mean, Darren Dalton with the matinee idol looks, you know, the catcher for the Phillies. A quick story on him. I don't know if you ever heard this about Darren Dalton, but he married – a girl that was he was a very, very good looking guy, and he married a beautiful girl that was a Hooters model. She wasn't a Hooters girl. She didn't actually work in a restaurant, but she was like a Hooters model or something. So anyway, this is back in the 90s. So anyway, they got divorced. Something happened where they got divorced. Anyway, he was playing in the outfield. He played most of his career as a catcher, but he was playing right field. And I don't know which team it was, but some team to troll him had T-Mac, you know how they have the outfield signage? They had like his wife in her Hooters get up, you know, laying down. And it went from like left center field to the left field pole. And he's playing in left field or right field, right center field to the right field pole. And he had to play right field, and it was his wife behind him, his ex-wife behind him the whole time.
Oh, no.
Yeah, in her Hooters pose or something.
That's good. That's classic hazing right there. That's good. Yeah. That's good.
That was pretty good. All right. When we return, Colt Kubelik joins us. We'll have the Fab Five next right here. 730-1039, yeah.